You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. This morning we have a great opportunity to hear about success and business in Southern California, as well as success in life and how to reach out a hand to help those who might see no hope. And the hand that comes out is one of hope. I want to welcome Tony and Ann Lancaster to the show. So tell us a little bit about handing out hope, Tony.
You bet. So our business is Hope Cafe and Catering, and HOPE stands for Help One Person Every Day. And our mission is to reach the outcast, outsourced, overlooked, teach them a trade, teach them how to feed themselves, feed their family, feed the community. So we use our business to reach out to perhaps people that other companies might look past because they have an issue in their past. And we know that God can restore all things. And so we use our business to lend that helping hand and extend hope.
You know, there's a lot of the world out there that wants to convince people that they are hopeless, that they have obstacles that are unsurmountable. And it really is just a miracle to change that picture, that belief, right? Just to dissolve it and blow it away, that everyone has potential.
Absolutely. Speaking of hopeless, in November of 2008, I came to Southern California with a change of clothes in the backpack. I had lost absolutely everything, years of drug and alcohol abuse, and in the end, had moved away and got into business with one of my family members. And it went bad really, really quickly. And I lost everything, multiple homes, the business, my car, and was literally living in the desert for 8 months, trying to figure out if I was going to forgive this family member or kill her.
And the decision?
Well, I couldn't do either at the time. So I did know that, you know, where do we go when we're in trouble? We go back home. And so my dad offered his home up. And so I made it back home and thought I was going to get sober. Unfortunately, the environment that he had wasn't conducive to that. And so over a short period of time, I was back to my old ways. And then one morning, I walked into his bathroom and I looked in the mirror. And in the mirror was the reflection of my head, but on my chest was just charcoal. And I actually fell to my knees, and I called out to a God that I didn't know, and asked him to either save me or take me. And he did both. It took a couple of days, but I called a 800 number for a helpline, and the guy on the other line said he understood what I was going through, and he had some help for me. He told me to wait by the phone. It took 3 days to get that phone call back. When I got the call, they suggested that I come down to Covina, and I had no idea where Covina was. And so they told me, and I said, great. I said, I hope it doesn't cost any money because I have absolutely nothing left. And so they made arrangements. My mom actually was able to pay for my first month's rent at a sober living. And so my little brother dropped me off with a change of clothes and a backpack. And as the story goes, he kicked me to the curb and said, good luck, sucker. And it was the same thing that I had told him years before when he was trying to get sober, and I was sober at the time. And so in that process of getting sober, I realized that not only did I need to stop drinking and using, I needed to pretty much change my entire life. And in that process, you know, I needed to find this God that people were talking about, not the God that I grew up with, which was a damning God, one that didn't want a sinner like me, so I thought. And in that process, you know, I began to have a different relationship. And during that process, that's when I met my beautiful wife, Ann. And we started this journey together. And she took me to the church for the first time. With a new set of eyes, and we started this process of healing and recovery, and starting to restore hope. And during that process, was pretty remarkable.
So, Ann, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this hopeless mess over here, right?
Well, that's an interesting story, too. I had just gone through a messy divorce, and we had both were working for a mutual friend at the time, but we didn't know it. And this woman was instrumental in helping both of us and through our situations individually. And then it was at a bridal shower she was throwing for her daughter-in-law-to-be that she had Tony there to do the food, and I came to just help lend a hand and serve. And so we met in the kitchen, and
I got to cut in here, Will. So I'm here cooking, and Ann walks to the door, and I say to the guy that's with me, I said, I'm going to marry that woman.
Whoa!
And he goes, you can't even get her phone number.
Yes, yes.
And guess what? He was right. It took me 3 months to be able to get her phone number.
Right. Yeah, so by then, you know, I thought he'd completely forgotten about me. You know, we had a lot of fun. We're laughing, and he was feeding me all kinds of yummy things in the kitchen. And so our mutual friend had called me a few months later and said, you know, hey, would you like to have dinner with him? And I was just like, I couldn't even remember what he looked like. All I remembered was he had a mustache.
And served good food.
and was a great cook. But, yeah, but I said, sure, why not, you know. And the three of us actually had dinner together, which was nice to kind of break the ice, and started to get to know him a little better. And he was just very open and honest about his past, which did scare me at the time, because I started, you know, just what I had been through, and, you know, my baggage and his baggage, you know, added up to be a whole lot of baggage. And so that was a little scary. But I could really see, you know, how determined he was, and just God's hand in his life and the changes he was making, the direction he was going. And so we just stuck with it, and we're just doing life together. He was helping me raise my two kids, and I just finished getting through school to get a job and get back on my feet. And it was really, I think, God ordained. We just, you know, kept walking one step at a time, and doing what he was gifted at, which of course was cooking. And so we would do the catering together, and started getting small jobs here and there, and started to build the business.
Well, is you know, you mentioned the baggage. Would you say that's part of the transformation that you see at Hope Catering, that people have to let go of their baggage? You have to let it disappear, because as long as they're focusing on the baggage, the things in the past, that that they are caught in that net.
Right.
And so, you know, I guess one of the biggest fears of travelers is they lose their baggage. Mm. But isn't that one of the greatest gifts, is to lose your baggage?
Yes, I would say so, completely.
I remember the fire in Laguna Beach. We had just been here 2 or 3 years. And I was one of the last people out of the canyon. Mm. And so we were at St. George's Church, where I was working at the time, in Laguna Hills. And my wife came over from Riverside, where she was working at Cal Baptist University. And we thought the house had burned. Oh. And inside me was this relief. Oh, my goodness, we don't have to move that stuff again. Well, fortunately, the firemen put the fire out that tenth of a mile before, you know, away from Summit. But I'm still carrying that stuff around. We still have two huge storage units. But there is this real sense of freedom when you can let go of things, you can let go of beliefs, you can let go of all those things that are holding you back.
I think that's
absolutely
one of the things that we deal with today as we're walking through life and having obstacles. And because of our relationship and our partnership as husband and wife, that's the cool part, is we can draw from those experiences. So when we're faced with a big challenge, let's say, or a big loss, you know, I can reflect back of remembering what it's like to walk around with bags on my hands or bags on my feet to stay warm, or the occasional times that I actually ate out of a dumpster. So when you have that perspective, you don't hold on to things as tightly. It's not like you want to necessarily lose everything and continue to lose everything, but it's not that important. You know, there's a roof over our head. It might be a different roof, or there might be different food, or there might be a different job or a different opportunity. But the reality is all of it, the way we look at it today, is it's all God's. So whatever He allows us to share in, we're grateful for.
Well, and I think that whole notion of one way to talk about would be adaptability. Another way would be looking toward what's coming, what's being presented to us, looking at the gifts rather than the burdens. I think back, you know, when we look at what we're learning about the cosmos right now, billions and billions of years, and those pieces in there. I mean, galaxies had to be destroyed to move forward, and the first part of existence was this huge destruction of atomic particles. I mean, all of this, and when you bring it down to us, we seem to react to the loss as something, the loss of something we want to go back and regain, rather than the loss being something that opens us up to the new gift that God's bringing to us.
Yeah, and I think we find that a lot in recovery. You know, they say you have to hit bottom in order to be recovered or start the recovery process. And it's not necessarily that you have to be, you know, the homeless drunk. But if we can put ourselves into that state of brokenness to where we truly start off a new beginning from the inside out, that's where we can rebuild our life. Not to our own making, but allow God to use what He's already instilled in us and the purpose that He's had on our heart that we didn't even know, but we were bearing with, you know, the issues that we were dealing with, whether it is in childhood or upbringing or early teens, or it doesn't matter. I mean, we all have issues, and that's the beauty of being in this stage of my life, especially, is realizing that my sin is no different than anyone else's sin. My brokenness is no different than anyone else's. You know, the only difference is I'm very transparent about where I come from, because my old life would be, I'm a chameleon. I can hide. I can lie and cheat and steal my way through any situation. And today I just can't do that. It can't be, you know, any part of me. And sometimes it scares people because it's a crazy story. You know, we were talking about early on, and one of the things was we started dating in June. I got baptized in September. I asked her to marry me in October. And then 2 months later in December, I was taking the train up to Fresno to do a wedding. And I was taking the train because, well, I had my license revoked for life in 2007. And so I was taking the train, and I was praying to this God that I just met. And I'm like, what do you want me to do with my life? Clearly, I don't know. And on that piece of paper, He told me to start writing. And on the top of it was our name, Hope Cafe and Catering, and our mission, the way it stands today. And I just looked down at that, and I just realized, you know what? This has to be from God. One, it's in the restaurant business, which I was done with, I felt. And it had employees, which I definitely didn't want anything to do with. You know, and I'm okay as long as I'm the one doing all the work. But if I have to work through other people, that was just a major hurdle for me. And, you know, and it's through that process of knowing, you know, hey, here I'm stuck in Southern California, and God's calling me to do this business, and most likely I'm going to need to drive, and I can't drive. How am I going to do this? And the only way is God's just continued to show up over and over and over. And as I joke with Ann, He continues to keep me in that desperate state. And she goes, I want nothing to do with that desperate state.
Exactly. Well, it seems to me that a lot of what you're talking about, that hiding, that lying, that trying to deny, so many human beings do. And it seems to me it's because they're afraid that if somebody knows that they will not love them. then in fact, they will have negative love. They will start pushing them away. And to me, the place that is dissolved is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. When I can know that I am forgiven, and I think the way that I learn that I'm forgiven is by forgiving others. And in a sense, that's what hope is doing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Hope catering is they are listening. You got to know the stories of the people who are coming. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a secret.
No.
And it's helping them to recognize that in telling their story, that they are then forgiven, and they can experience that over and over. And once they know that they'll be forgiven, that's where I think the baggage gets let go of.
Absolutely.
I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, I think that's one of the funny things when I'm talking to other business owners, and they're asking them about who we hire and how we go about that, and how can we take such big risks hiring a homeless person or somebody with a felony background or whatever issue they have. And I'm like, well, when you sit down and you look at a resume, how many things are missing off that resume? When you're having that interview one-on-one, how many things aren't said that are either glossed over or just not even mentioned? And the reality is with every employee, whether they have a glaring issue that they're walking through or in their past, everybody has stuff. And that's the reality. And so the cool part is I get to share about my stuff, which then opens up the opportunity for them to share about their stuff. Because that's the one thing, you know, we have to have trust from the very beginning. You know, we have to lay it all on the table and realize that, you know, hey, God can take that mess and make a message and take us from hopeless to have hope. And how do we, you know, share that hope, et cetera, if we allow it to be transparent. And I think that's the coolest thing. And it's very uncomfortable when I sit down with people, and, you know, sometimes for them to share, because they might not be as far as long as me in my recovery and might not want to share it because they're ashamed and they feel guilt and they feel less than.
And they're afraid they'll be judged.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about that recovery, when I hear the word recovery, I hear the recovery of my experience of my relationship with a loving God and other people who love me. Because it seems to me that a lot of the issues around abuse, around drugs, alcohol, you name it, I mean, all of these things that cry out, I will hide you, I will take care of you, I just do this and you'll be okay, those are all false. But when we recover that sense that maybe we lost very early in childhood, even through foster families who were abusive or disasters, but when we lost that sense of being a child of God, loved by God and loved by other people around us in a community, that to me is the real recovery.
Mm. Absolutely. And to be able to use our business, which we don't even call it our business, it's God's business, you know, to be able to bring that hope and that joy back to an individual that maybe hasn't worked in a number of years. I mean, the first homeless guy that we hired through our partnership with Door of Hope, which is a nonprofit in Pasadena that has transitional housing for families. We hired him, and 3 years later, he bought his first house. I mean, to go from homelessness to buying your first home in 3 years, being unemployable to be employable, and then us helping him move on to better employment outside of us. It's not, hey, you have to stay here. It's like the whole point is we're there to help them in their journey. If it's 6 days, 6 minutes, 6 months, 6 years, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's not about what we're doing here today. It's trying to help them fulfill their purpose and identify what that is and help them and let them move on and make room for others.
Mm-hmm. And back to the baggage.
Yes.
It's very difficult to fulfill our purpose if we still have hanging on to the baggage that other people have given to us that holds us back. And that to me is what that forgiveness is about, is you don't have to bring out all of the excuses and all of the places to hide and all of the reasons. You can let go.
Yes.
Because because there are places and people who will love you, and through that you can experience God's love for you. Well, so tell me, give me some stories about what's going on at Hope Cafe and Catering.
Sure thing. We actually came into the business in 2012. I originally started with a family that owned existing catering company and came on board with them as a consultant. They were looking for an employee, and I went and met with them. And I said, well, God's got me called to do this thing. And I looked around this production kitchen, and I said, this clearly is not Hope Cafe and Catering. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was waiting. And so I said, you know, I could probably help you for a little while. And I did. And then went away for a few months and then reconnected with them. And they own some other businesses, some grocery stores, and they asked me to consult for them there. And then after a few months, they asked me to go back to Pasadena, and Mom, who owned half the business, was contemplating wanting to close down the business. And the son wanted to keep it, but really didn't want to run it. And so he asked me to go do an assessment of the business. And so we went back there and did an assessment and then came back and said, yeah, I think you should keep it. This is what you can do for it to make sense. And he said, well, great. Mom still wants to sell it. You got less than a month to figure out how you're going to buy my mom out.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that home to Ann, and we did lots of praying and said, well, if God wants us to do this, we'll figure out a way. And sure enough, we were able to do that. And in that process, we had a business that was called Kilroy's Sandwich Factory, still our corporate name today. And then we had this thing that God was calling us to, which was the Hope Cafe and Catering, and they were two different entities. And at the same time, I also had my own catering company that we were doing just independent stuff on. And so I had these three things that I was balancing every day, and as the phone rang and people were asking for our services, I was always challenged with, well, who are they calling? Are they calling Kilroy's? Are they calling Chef Tony? Or are they calling, you know, Hope? Have they heard something about Hope? And so finally, one day, I was praying, and God just really put it on me. He said, you know, what are you doing trying to serve three masters? And it just hit me. And so I took it to Ann, and I said, hey, I think, you know, God wants us to try to do this here. And she's like, well, okay. And then, well, what are you going to do with other business? I'm just going to fold it into this business. And she goes, well, we own 100% of that. You're going to put it into a 50-50 partnership? And I'm like, well, it's all God. So, you know, and so I just kind of took that approach.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, once we did that, God just started blessing it. And so then we were able to go out and meet with all of our customers and tell them about Hope and tell them about the story and tell them about what God's done in my life and why we're going to change the business that, because it was a Christian business on paper, but it didn't mean anything to the customers. It didn't mean anything to the employees. And for us, I just wanted to turn it upside down because me, as a new believer, I was on fire, and I wanted to share what it's like to be served by someone that is led by Christ, because that's what I was looking for in my personal life, and if I was going to do business, I wanted to do it that way as well. And so that's when we kind of embarked on this whole journey, and it's kind of continued to evolve and evolve ongoing.
Well, all right. So Tony, I want to take a little time here for our sponsors, and then we'll come back, and I want you to tell me a little bit about these core values that it's so important when you start talking about being on paper, having our core values on paper, putting them on the wall or putting them in a three-ring binder and putting them up on the shelf. But when you start sharing those with everybody in your organization, even your vendors and your customers, as you begin to do that, some magic things begin to happen. So I want to come back after our short break here and talk a little bit more about that.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Well, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we were talking about hope for the hopeless. So, Tony, we were talking about, before we left, we were talking about how you take these values that people have, even as they begin to articulate them, and then share them with the whole organization. So tell us a little about what your core values are for Hope Cafe and Catering.
Sure thing. So we have four core values. One is live generously. The second would be give grace, grace. And yes, that's not a typo. Mm-hmm. Double grace. Yes. Compassionate towards all. And then the last is really the first, which is our first fruits commitment. And it's truly giving 10% of our sales to local churches, ministries, nonprofits throughout Southern California.
Well, so go back and talk a little bit. Tell us your value speech. Tell us a little bit about each of those values, how that, what those mean.
Absolutely. So live generously. I think for us, it's so important for us. I mean, we're in our business all the time. So it's very important to not only, live one way at home and live one way at church and live one way in business. For us, we need to live the same way everywhere we go. And so living generously is not only, it's sharing what God has blessed you with. So for us is our business. For us would be finances. For us would be our time, our talents. And it's being able to invest and give generously to those around us. Internally within the company, of course, is with our employees, for them to have a different experience than they would typically have in this type of work environment, to be able to feed into their lives, not only individually, but to their family, and invest in them because they are, they're part of our family. They're not just employees, they are our family. So I think it starts there, and then that kind of rolls over to our customers as well. It's not only giving them a great value in the food that we provide, but also giving them a great service, and also paying attention to what they're doing. And if there's a way that they're out there trying to serve the community, help support them in a way. And I think for us is really important is not get so fixated on who we're passionate about serving, but coming along other people that are passionate about serving and recognizing their passion and support them as well. Give grace. Grace is, we were kind of laughing about it, me and Ann, it's easy to say, oh yeah, we got to give grace. And the first grace is always easy. Mm-hmm. It's the double or the triple grace. And then also recognizing that giving too much grace sometimes in certain situations can be harmful, not only to them as an individual, but to your business, to other employees, etc. And I put ourselves in our business sometimes in bad places, giving too much grace. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Ann would agree with that. Yeah. Compassionate towards all is, for me, it's easy to forget where I come from. As I now drive down the street, because that Revoke for Life ended in February of this year, so after 10 years, I actually got my license back. But when I'm driving down the street and I see that person holding a sign and says something, I always keep some money in my car and or some other things to give away. And at the same time, sometimes I can't stop, and sometimes I call Ann and say, hey, on your way in, we did this the other day, there's a lady at this corner, and I've seen her a couple of times, and why don't you stop by and figure out if there's a way that we can help her? And it's so realizing that everybody has a story, mm-hmm. and we need to stop and listen, and just wait. because, you know, God puts people in our path for a reason. And we get so fixated, especially, you know, me, you know, I'm a fixer. I'm a guy. I want immediate gratification. I want to fix it now. But the reality is sometimes we just need to sit and wait and realize, what is God really calling us to do in this situation? And sometimes it's hand out money, and sometimes it's hand out food, and sometimes it's give him a job, and sometimes it's just stopping and talking to him and asking them what their name is. I mean, you'll be blown away if you take 5 minutes a week and stop your car, get out of your car, and walk up to someone that's on the side of the street with a cardboard sign, and just talk to them. Your life will change, and their life will change, because when they're in that spot, most of them feel like, you know, they're hidden, that they have no purpose, that nobody's paying attention to them, that they don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really doing at that point is denying that division that some other entity is telling us exists. And we're affirming our unity as children of God.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's just, the other day was the lady. Mm-hmm. It was one day I was in the kitchen, and I'm cooking, and, going crazy in the kitchen, and Ann comes walking in the kitchen. She goes, "Hey, there's a whole homeless family that I just brought in, and I want to feed them some food." And I walk out into our loading dock, because it's just a big commercial kitchen, and here we got, you know, 15 people that are sitting there.
All right, so Ann, tell us what happened. What happened?
Well, we have a Unity Center across the street from the kitchen, and they hand out food daily.
And groceries, yeah.
Yeah, and so this family, they had four kids, and their mother and her husband, and they had gone there early, and either they hadn't gotten their shipment of food or something, and all they were able to give them was a package of cookies. And this was, gosh, probably about 8 o'clock in the morning. So here she's got these hungry kids and a package of cookies, and they're walking up the street, and she saw me in one of the work vehicles I had parked on the side street, and it had the logo that said Hope Cafe. And she said, hey, what is that, Hope? And I said, well, we're a catering company. And I, you know, didn't know what had just happened, you know. And I said, do you need something, or, you know, what's going on? And she told me what had just happened. And I said, come over to the kitchen. We're right around the corner. And I'll get you some breakfast. And so she and the stroller and the kids and the mom came walking in. I said, just have a seat right here. And went in and told them, you know, got some help, and said, heat up some breakfast burritos and, you know, get some orange juice and stuff for the kids. And, you know, we just fed them. They were going through trying to get back to Texas, but had been just barely keeping off the streets here. And just didn't know what else to do till they could get their car fixed. And so it was quite a story and what they had been through. And just, she said, just to have you give us, you know, a good meal to start our day. And then they went on and took the kids to the park. And
well, all right, so how do we deal with this belief that somebody wants us to have that if they're not taking care of themselves, taking responsibility for themselves, they don't deserve the handout. Mm. How do you deal with that? I mean, I often ask people in my training, when it comes down to beliefs that we have, I ask them, do you believe that there's enough food in the world to feed everybody? And without exception, every one of the people in the training says yes. Mm. And then I ask them, why are they hungry people?
Mm.
And so how do you deal with that as a provider? What do you say when those, we can't give food stamps to people who aren't working, when those kind of beliefs come out, what do we say?
I think the important thing to remember that, and we're just in the hotbed of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go downtown LA and, you know, they're just everywhere. And we do work down there as well. Yeah, you know, and the reality is the mental health issue is just phenomenal. You know, of course, there's drugs and alcohol and issues down there. And so the reality is out of the 48,000 that are on the street down there, you know, probably 10% of them don't even live down there. They actually have a home. They just are comfortable down there. And then half the people that are down there actually want to stay homeless. That's actually the lifestyle that they prefer. And then there's a portion that actually would like some help. Mm-hmm. And the reality is there's a lot of great organizations that have what they do and do really well. We do a poor job as a community coming together and sharing that information together and saying, hey, we do this, you do this, we do this, let's combine resources and let's collectively go after this problem versus, oh, this is the only people that we serve or this is the only way that we do it. And I think that's the cool part about us, and one reason why we're not a nonprofit is we can take our approach and do absolutely anything with our money. And so, you know, friends of ours that have nonprofits, you know, they're kind of set on how they have to serve and what they do. And so, and I think we're slowly taking the change as a community, but I think even then, we just, because there's so much money being raised by the taxes and so forth, they actually end up handcuffing the agencies that are trying to help. And that's the frustrating part. So I spoke to Dora Hope earlier, and they have three homes, and one of them is specific for women that were abused, so women and children, undisclosed location. They lost a $300,000 a year grant. Mm. In a time when there's so much homelessness and so much brokenness, and because of the way these monies are raised and the things that we put on this money and how it's being spent, it becomes harder and harder to actually use the money, which is just crazy. You know, but the cool part is that was a great story too. Just a month ago, we had a small gathering of 100 friends that we did a dinner for, and we threw it out there to the group of friends. We said, hey, you know, here's Dora Hope. They lost us $300,000, and then one night we raised $250,000.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
That's amazing, yeah.
It seems to me that that's part of our responsibility here in Southern California. We are an abundant place. We have lots of resources.
Yes.
We have lots of time, and we have lots of money. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that part of that is the question of how are we going to be good stewards of that time, resources, and money. And not, you know, we're not going to solve every problem in the world, but we can certainly use that. I mean, focus on where are the greatest needs for love, for forgiveness.
Yes.
We don't have to require people to believe in God to recognize that they're loved.
Right.
And in fact, it may be that as they recognize that they're loved, that they come to understand what God is all about.
That's right.
And I mean, remember St. Francis saying, preach the gospel continuously, and if necessary, use words.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's the key to our business is, trying to be Christ's hands and feet in the workplace. To serve our employees, being led by Christ. And in that process, dialogue starts to happen, questions start being asked, but nothing's forced on anyone. No one has to believe any particular way or believe what we believe. The idea is that we believe what we believe, and you can believe whatever you need to believe. And the reality is we're going to journey together, and ultimately, you know, that's what God calls us to be, not to go beat people over the head about, hey, you got to do... We don't need any of that. It's just a pretty cool process to be a part of. And in Southern California, unfortunately, California just makes it so tough to even donate food. Mm. You can't, if you're homeless, you cannot go to a food bank and get food. Did you know that, Will?
No.
You can't because you don't have a home. You actually have to have a bill that shows your address in order to get food at a food bank.
Yeah, you have to show residence.
And so if you're homeless, you actually can't go get food. Now, if you're lucky enough where you have an address, you supply that, you get groceries, but you can only get groceries once a month, mm-hmm. for 6 months.
Well, that's where my wife is the heretic.
Right.
Right? Because at St. Michael's in Riverside, what she does is she goes to the food bank, gets the food. She gets food, not her, but the ministry center, gets food donated from UCR, you name it.
Right.
Sprouts, Starbucks, all of this food comes.
Good.
And who cares?
That's right.
It's given away. And in fact, it's so interesting because it's all staffed by people who are homeless.
So
it's not a soup kitchen. It is really a community of hope for all people.
And so
what happens is people come in and their initial fear is, oh, we can't give all this away. And what she says is, if you don't give it away, there's no place for the next batch.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And so it's a continuous throwing away out to people. And so I think that's part of the way that we move beyond the baggage of we can't to why can't we?
That's right.
And that, to me, is what's exciting about business in Southern California. As we begin to recognize that it's not just a matter of politics and bills and laws, it's also a matter of us having core values that reflect the kind of core values that you have, and begin to share that with all, so that then we're looking for ways to serve rather than ways to simply follow the law.
Absolutely. And I think we can get overwhelmed. I mean, the homelessness situation is overwhelming. And, you know, me personally, I love going down and serving. And we'll go down and make lunch for 400 people and serve them in 45 minutes. And I just love creating that environment for other people to serve. But then it also gives me a chance to talk to people and share about hope. You know, but for others, it becomes overwhelming. And like for Ann, it became overwhelming. How do we affect? And I said, just pick one. Mm-hmm. You know, have the effect on one. If we had every church in Southern California just take 10 homeless people and mentor and foster them, we would have no homelessness.
Absolutely.
You know, so I mean, it's a huge number, don't get me wrong. But in the scheme of things, it's very small.
Well, remember the story about the starfish. Remember the story?
Mm-hmm.
One woman is on the beach, and here are all of these starfish up and down the beach that are obviously dying because they're outside the tidal range. And so she is going down the beach, throwing starfish one at a time back in the ocean. And a man sitting there smoking a cigar says, "What are you doing? You can't save all of these people. That's nothing. You can't. They don't care about all of this." And as she flings one out, she says, This one does.
That's right.
And I think that's part of it, is moving beyond the fear of, oh, we have millions of people coming into our country to do all sorts of nefarious things, to this is Amelia. And this is her child.
Mm-hmm.
How do we handle that? What
Absolutely.
Do we do with that? And that's what I love about what you were doing at HOPE. Now, tell us what HOPE stands for.
Help one person every day.
One starfish at a time.
That's right.
Yeah, it was one of those things. We didn't have that acronym before when we first started. And, you know, as I was out sharing with corporate customers, so I'm in Fortune 500 customers, telling them my story of brokenness and how God saved me, and not really caring whether or not they were offended at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, trying to share it in a way that wasn't offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were just contemplating this whole thing, and how can we articulate exactly what we stand for in a way that could be easily communicated. And that's when we were given that acronym. And once we got it, it really, really, you know, connected people. It's really simple to remember. And it's pretty cool just to hear. And part of our website, we have a blog, a place for blogging, about sharing their story of hope and blessing other people, and sharing about ways that we can bless people by not spending any money. I mean, because we can get wrapped up in that, oh, I don't have extra, so I can't do that. you know, and the reality is there's so many things that we can do with just our time
right.
and our talents and just a few minutes here and there that we can have a huge impact. And you know, Anne can tell you because she thought I was crazy. I mean, well, I actually, when we first got together, I gave away our rent 3 days before it was due.
Well, aren't we all crazy? Is that what it's about? There was a fella that was once hung on the cross who was accused of being crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he was. He was absolutely crazy. By the definition of the culture, it's craziness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The more craziness, the better.
Now, so for us, you know, the cool part is we're able to do business in a different way than other people. We have this social good aspect to us, which connects people to us. So our corporate customers like it because they're being able to give back to the community through us. And then, especially like on our events and weddings, millennials these days just love the give back opportunity. And so when they find out that 10% of what they're spending for their wedding, what a better, you know, there's not a better way to start out your life than to spending your money with a company that's willing to do something, you know, back in the community right. in a tangible way.
And lest we fear competition, it wouldn't be too bad if every company did that.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, most definitely. You know, and that's the cool part. And that's our challenge. You know, we're part of several different organizations, Convene being one of them. Mm-hmm. And it's a Christian business owner, entrepreneur, presidents are all part of this. And a lot of great companies out there. And we share about our business and our model and kind of how we're doing it. And some of them look at me like I'm crazy.
Of course you are.
You know, and they're like, well, you can't give away that much money until you actually are making a lot more money. And I go back to the original conversation with our partner when he asked us to buy it. I said, well, you know, when we figured out how we could do it, I said, I'm okay with it, but, you know, we have to be a true first fruits company. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? And I said, well, the Bible clearly tells us to do this at our home, so 10% of what we make, not what we bring home. I said, I think the same thing's called for in the business. And he's like, we've never made 10%. Well, how are we going to give that away?
Well, Citizens United did say that a business is a person, right?
That's right.
So therefore.
Yeah. That's right. And so once we started doing it, just God's blessed it.
You haven't missed a meal.
We have not missed
and
a meal.
You're still making rent.
We are making rent. And it's been hard at times. Mm-hmm. You know, it hasn't been easy. Mm-hmm. And I've second-guessed it. And I've had to look at it sometimes and say, well, maybe I can't say crazy yeses all the time.
Right. Right. Well, you know, that happened with my wife when she was ordained about 8 years ago in the Episcopal Church as a priest. I had been, you know, tithing now and tithing then and once and back and forth, right? And I always said, well, you know, when I get a lot of money in my business, then I'll give a lot away. And her bishop said to her, when you're ordained, you're going to tithe 10%, and that's pre-tax. Yeah. And so she was doing that, and she looked at me after a year, and she said, I don't care how much money you're going to be making in the future. Now is the time. Mm. And at that point, it was, okay, I'll do it. And then it was, all right, so I gave $10,000, right? Mm. Which was 10% of what my company was making. And I felt so good that I said, you know, if this feels good, I wonder what it'd feel like to give $35,000 away.
Absolutely.
Wow. Now, you know what that meant that I had to do in my business then, right?
Mm. Sure.
We had to triple the business, and we were on the way to do that.
Mm. Oh.
And so it seems to me that there's some connection between the goal of giving and the actual receiving.
Absolutely. So last year, Will, we did $1.2 million, mm-hmm. and we were able to give away a little over $120,000 mm-hmm. in just the business.
Mm-hmm.
So this year what happens is we decide that our 10-year goal is to grow 10 times as big as we are.
Uh-huh.
So you do the math and you go, okay, we got to grow 25% a year, year over year,
mm-hmm.
and in 10 and a half years, we'll be there. Well, we're growing at 25% now.
Uh-huh.
Once we made that decision, okay. Mm-hmm. And then next week, we actually open a new location downtown L.A., and so we'll be able to grow another 30% for the 6 months year over year, and then an additional 50%, you know, the next year. And so it's just amazing what God does with what we're doing. You know, meaning, you know, we don't do it because we're going to get these rewards. It's like, hey, if you're going to take care of my people and do what I call you to do, I'm going to reward you because I know you're going to take care of it.
Well, I would like to suggest that it is the way that the universe works. The universe works through abundance.
Absolutely.
And for some reason, someplace, we forgot that and began to think that the universe is really a scarcity place, and we have to have power and celebrity, and we have to grab for everything we can because it's scarce. And I think we see over and over in all sorts of scriptures, not only the New Testament with feeding of the 5,000 and healings and all of that, but in other scriptures as well, that the universe is abundant. And when we come to that awareness that in giving, back to St. Francis, it's in giving that we receive.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that the real secret to this is when you are committed to giving, then the universe responds with a lot of stuff that you hadn't anticipated.
Yes.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here.
If
people wanted to come eat or to hire you for catering or just wanted to talk, how would they get in touch with Ann and Tony Lancaster?
Absolutely. You can always go to our website, which is www.hope.com. H-O-P-E, Cafe, C-A-F-E, and A-N-D, Catering, C-A-T-E-R-I-N-G.com. You can reach us there. You can always call us. Our phone number is 626-449-8757. And by all means, I mean, we would love to help out in any catering needs. We've done up to 15,000 people. We actually make everything from scratch in our 6,000 square foot kitchen, which is a pretty remarkable.
How about geography?
Geography, we're located in Pasadena, and our wheelhouse is a 10-mile radius. But the reality is we serve throughout Southern California. Mm-hmm. And we're one of the only ones that can do over 10,000 people with 48-hour notice. Mm-hmm. So we can do some pretty crazy things, and we have done them. You know what? Well, the cool part is we're available, whether it's a catering need or you just need someone to pray for you, or if you have some prayers for us, we are more than happy to answer the phone and have a conversation. We are not too busy to help somebody in their journey. It has nothing to do with our business.
Well, I will tell Jen to put you on our list of potential caterers for our meetings. Well, this is wonderful. So glad that you were with us today. You have blessed us by your presence and by all the great things that you're doing. Plus, you're making a profit. Wonderful. How to make businesses thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.